This recording is a production of Faith Builders Resource Group. This recording was made at Reach 2022, a conservative Anabaptist ministry convention hosted by Faith Builders Educational Programs on March 24 and 25, 2022, in Lancaster, Pennsylvania.
Well, here we are. Isn't language learning hard? You know, I've heard that statement so many times that I thought it would be a good title to jump off from. Even had a conversation in church just a little while ago from someone who had been in India, and he said, there's just no way I could learn the language, but my children, you know, age really is a big factor. And I said, no, it's not. Yes, it is. No, it's not, honestly. I mean, there's research that's debunked that now for decades. So I got it together, and he said, well, that's all right, I won't read it. But I've got some funny stories to tell about that anyway. So it's good to see you here. And I wanted to have this session to be an opportunity to look for answers and to share ideas and tips. So I'll try to give you some of what I taught at IGO, as well as what I've learned personally. Questions, answers, tips, and tricks. So language study, why are you here for this talk? I'm kind of curious. Why are y'all here?
I'm trying to learn Arabic, and it's hard.
Ooh! Okay. Anyone else have?
I have a lot of Hispanic neighbors, so I'm trying to learn Spanish.
Whew. I'm right there with you. Just moved about a year ago to a neighborhood that's got a lot of Dominican and Puerto Rican people, and I still haven't tried. Well, okay, I thought, you know, maybe you want to learn a new language, a target language, or you want to understand better how you can learn a language that you've been working on. I just took some guesses, or maybe you're just curious. Well, there's a lot of people who've studied a foreign or a second language without learning it. If you happen to be one of those who studied a foreign language without learning it, I'd like you to raise your hand, and I'll be honest. Okay. And take a look around you, because you can see you're not alone in this boat. There's others who have studied a language without learning it. Can you speak that language fluently? No? Okay. Was the class helpful? I took French in high school. A little different question now. How many people speak more than one language? Ooh, okay. How about more than two? Okay, how about four or more? Okay, the cutoff there somewhere around. Okay, well, for those of you who've learned the languages, what did you do? How did you learn the language?
Lived in the culture where I was.
Ooh, okay. That's what I love to hear, because that's what it was for me, too, for my wife. A lot of people have spent time in language class. So I guess, like some of you, I studied French in high school. I didn't learn the language. But, you know, I've seen in my travels that everyone in the world has learned a language, and actually without studying it, most of them. And even more, probably half the world is multilingual, and they didn't go to school to study their second languages in most cases. When I was working on my master's degree, there were some people from Africa in some of my classes, and, you know, the one fellow was like, oh, yeah, well, you know, I grew up and there was the tribal language that we spoke, and then, you know, my mother's parents, they each had their tribal languages, so I learned their tribal languages. And then my father's parents, they had two different tribal languages. And then, well, when I went to school, I had friends that learned another. So some of these people in Africa, you know, they speak six, seven, eight languages. And some of them are pretty distinct, too. So it's amazing, and you just sort of learn it. So don't you have to wonder what makes that difference? Isn't it interesting? You know, we live in a world where millions of people have studied a language without learning it. Millions of people. And yet there's billions of people who've learned languages without studying them. So sometimes you get this feeling like it's almost your choice, you know, which do you want? There's a lot of ways, you know, there's a lot of people who've studied in a language class and they've learned, they're successful. So what makes the difference when you're studying language in a language class and it works? Probably one simple thing. The student understands that it's their responsibility, that they're the language learner, and it's not the teacher's responsibility solely to teach them the language. So the responsibility really lies on the shoulders of the student, but we don't always think about that. So here's something important that people don't consider often. Tom Brewster has said that normal language learning is not an academic activity. It's a social experience. Doesn't that make sense? If your goal is to learn another language, it's very likely that you're going to fail to do it. If your goal is to know people, to deeply know people, to love people, to serve people, then language learning is a great means to that end. Now, language learning doesn't make a great end in itself, but it makes an excellent means to a higher end. My interest is in the Great Commission. So if it wasn't for the Great Commission, I don't know if I'd be that interested in learning language. I guess it could be fun. You make friends, but there's lots of other fun things to do. So there's over 7,000 languages in the world today, they say, and probably over 4,000 of those will never have a language school or a teacher. And you say, whoa, no school. How would I ever learn a language? And that's a good question to ask. Better yet, let's ask how anyone ever learns a language. What about you? How did you learn to communicate in your heart language? Communication is more than talking, right? It's any form of a message that's sent from one party to another through sounds, words, physical hints, things like body language. So what about starting from the very beginning of life? Children. Now, a baby won't say their first meaningful words until they're about a year old. But even if they can't form words yet, baby's still trying to communicate with you through cries, coos, facial expressions, and body language. Just yesterday, day before, our daughter mentioned that their two-month-old, when everybody held hands at the table and bowed their heads to ask the blessing, the baby bowed her head too. Nobody told her. But it's what she's been seeing. So, at 0 to 6 months, a child will gain the sensitivity of the predominant rhythm of a language. So, they're learning the musical part of the language to begin with. And in the first main language stage, babbling, typically happens when a baby's between 6 and 8 months old, and it involves repetitive use of a consonant and a vowel, like ba ba ba, ma ma ma, da da da, things like that, ga ga. 91% of the speech that we address to 6 to 9 month old children is complex speech. If you think about it, we don't talk in really baby talk usually. And so it's continuous and complex speech. Well, between 6 and 9 months, a child can process about any language, but they are able to discriminate between their native tongue and some other language that's, you know, it's just they're basing it on the language sounds that they've been hearing. By about 7.5 months, a child's starting to segment words into chunks based on strong and weak syllables that we have in English. And they have a near adult ability. Amazing. And by stage two, the one word stage, where it's 9 to 18 months old, they're starting to communicate with single words like doggy, no, stop, things like that. And by 10.5 months, they've noticed a lot of cues that allow them to further segment speech into areas and then kind of toss it into different areas of their brain, and they pretty much have adult ability to chop speech up into bits. That's by 10.5 months. So after they've got this phonemic, or you know, the sound and the rhythmic idea of what their language is like, there's about 6 months where they concentrate on other aspects of these things. And the continuous speech is chopped up into chunks and limited. It limits the search space that you've got as you're trying to figure out what's this word and what does it mean and how do I do and how do I react. And next, this child begins to map or store words into fast retrieval areas in the brain. But there's this big silent period that precedes speech. And then all of a sudden, they hit the two-word stage, and that's just what it sounds like. They start speaking in two-word sentences like, doggy bark, mommy hat, things like that. And at 2 years, a child is going to be able to link sound patterns to meaning. They may not consider the full range of hypotheses of word meanings, but they can narrow word meanings down. They might have, they call it the whole object constraint. You might walk up to your car and you say, doorknob. And they think that doorknob is what the thing is, that whole big car, single object constraint. But they have a taxonomic constraint too. They say, okay, that doggy is part of a class of things called dogs. So they can look at a poodle and they can look at a German Shepherd and they know they're both dogs, even though they couldn't say poodle and German Shepherd, probably. Unless you're like me and I taught our oldest daughter how to say marsupial. When she was really young, she came out and impressed her grandmother and some other people too. Kangaroo is marsupial. Anyway. But they further refine these groups of words and phrases to help them understand, store, and utilize speech elements. So then you have a multi-word stage, sort of the telegraphic stage, where you might ask the child to repeat a sentence, and so you say, I can see the cow now. I see cow. Or maybe just see cow. But toddlers reach that stage between 24 months and 30 months. So look at everything that's happened in just 2 years. But imagine if somebody sent you out on the mission field and said, I want you to learn the language, but you don't have any other responsibilities. Don't worry about talking. Don't worry about responding to anybody until you feel like you know absolutely what you want to say, and you got the next 2 years. Don't do anything else. But that person who went to India, he had to teach people in English with a translator because he can't learn the language fast enough because he's busy learning or busy trying to teach them about how to make a budget or, you know, how to preach in the church or something like that. Well, yeah, it's nice when they actually give missionaries a chance to learn the language. So it's easy to live in the present And in reality, we have to. But if we're constantly looking like 2 inches ahead of ourselves, then we'll be running into objects that are only a couple of feet away from us 2 seconds ago. Boom. So let's not think of where we want to be in the right now time frame. But as older language learners, we've already accumulated a lot of skills in analyzing and organizing language. So let's look at where we want to be in a year or in 2 years, 5 years. I can give you an example, a few examples. We prepared to move to Romania back in 2001-2002, and by the second and third years that we were there, I was talking with legal people, discussing property boundaries, talking with the survey manager for a city, talking with import-export people, talking about how to get items transported by container, all in Romanian. And that's a pretty short time. Romanian's our comfortable family language, so if we think that we want to say something to one another and we don't want somebody else to understand, atunci, schimbam la Romanește. Then we change to Romanian. So then in Thailand, in our third year of language study and culture study in Thailand, I was able to teach on spiritual topics. I was able to moderate a worship service or preach a service in Thai. And I'm not a whiz at language acquisition. I was telling this one woman from Syria, she said, "I'm too old to learn." And I said, "How old are you?" She said, 50. And I said, "Oh." When I was 40, I learned how to speak Romanian. When I was 50, I learned how to speak Thai. Now that I'm 60, maybe Arabic or something like that. And so, you know, it's like you don't have a lot of excuse because there's other people who are learning languages at an older age, too. My point is, adults can learn and achieve a level of fluency probably faster than children because we've got all this scaffolding to hang stuff on. We know where things get put. We know about nouns and verbs and adjectives and all that. And so we've got stuff that's up here that we can attach structure to. But one thing you probably want to think about, you can achieve a level of fluency, but you may not really sound like a native speaker. But, you know, I switched my phone over because it was sounding weird. On Google Maps, I switched it over to Australian English. And, you know, I've just enjoyed hearing this, turn right at this lane and go on down that way. And but, you know, we hear accents and we think, oh, well, that's neat. We don't go, that's weird. Why is that person talking that way? And the same thing can happen. I was, one day I was waiting for my wife to come out of a doctor's appointment, just sitting in the hospital in a waiting area, and I was looking out the window, and I noticed it started raining. And so I wasn't really talking to anybody. I just sort of I said, the rain's falling. And this man who was next to me turned to respond, and he almost jumped out of his chair. He said, I thought you were Thai. So sometimes you can win a few. But I think most people could identify that I was not Thai. So anyway, I kept forgetting to tap this, that we have these techniques that we've already learned to analyze. We've got words, we've got structure, and we can adopt a long-term view, which, again, children don't have. Some ways that may be helpful. I'm watching this one refugee family from the Sudan. They speak Arabic. I don't speak Arabic. And they're children. And now after a few weeks of their boy he's 8 years old and he's going to school. And I came in and I said, did you go to school today? Yes. Did you enjoy it? Mm-hmm. Did you make new friends? Yeah. Okay. So I think he's got... He understands what's going on. But, you know, children really want to fit in. But don't we want to fit in too? Well, basically language and culture acquisition issues can be addressed at four different levels. So those levels spell out the word ramp. So there's relationships, there's an approach, there's a method, and this method, which is in this book, Language Acquisition Made Practical by Drs. Brewster and Brewster, they talk about the learning cycle where you have a particular set of steps that you go through, and any language learner uses these steps. It's very successful, whether you're in or out of school, whether you're a child, whether you're an adult. And those ideas are to get what you need, and then to learn what you get, and then you use what you got through involvement with people, specifically. And then E, evaluate and envision. That's sort of a backward, evaluate and envision, a forward-looking idea. And that acronym spells glue. And it really does glue the language in place. So beyond that, then, there are procedures. And this book is full of procedures. As a matter of fact, after writing the book, Tom and Betty Sue Brewster began to get letters from all over the world saying, is there some way that we could be learning from this book? Like, do you have teachers who teach from this book or some sort of supervision? Well, when they wrote the book, they were assuming that people could take independent responsibility for learning how to learn. Mm. But, you know, our society doesn't really prepare us for that. And he mentions that it's kind of like going into a cavern. You know, if you've ever been in a commercial cave, you go in and the tour guide clicks on a light and you see all of the beautiful things, and then you go through that room and they click off the light behind and then they click on the next one. But that's a tourist approach. But then there's the adventurer approach, where you go into an unmanaged cave and you just kind of explore your way around. Well, schools are like that. You know, you've got this teacher who flicks on the light and shows all these wonderful grammatic constructions and things like that, and then they click off the light. That's called a test. And, you know, once that light's clicked off, you had the test and you've told them everything that they taught you, then you can forget that and move on. So he lectured in quite a number of places talking about how to use this manual full of its many procedures, and to follow this glue learning cycle to learn language. So the A part of the approach, then, you got the method and the many procedures. The A part, the approach, that there's a difference between being this student and being the learner. To truly learn language, you need to be a learner. And the difference between the two is that the learner has the responsibility and the control of their learning. And a student has a teacher whose responsibility for controlling all that. So we must learn how to be learners. And then the R at the top of the ramp is relationships. And that's where it really, really comes into all of this fits into that. It's the most important part of all the issues. Because if you're right at the relationship level, the other things may not matter that much. If relationships are the most important issue in learning a language and culture, then, well, What do I have to understand if I want to experience close relationships with people of another ethnic group? If we look at Acts chapter 10, you know, it begins, Cornelius was a godly man. Okay. Cornelius was a godly man. He's a Gentile. And he's told in a vision to call for somebody named Peter. Okay. Meanwhile, Peter is up on the rooftop having a vision. Three times, Peter is shown this sheet or canvas or something full of unclean animals being set down, and he's told, rise up, kill and eat. And he's like, no, Lord, I've never done that. I'm not going to do that. And I kind of wonder, did Peter think he was being tested? Just, you know, well, you can tempt me if you want, Lord, but I'll stand true. I'll just be faithful. But here's the command the third time. The sheet is taken up, and that's it. And he wakes up, and he's perplexed. You bet he's perplexed. But God was not talking about food right then. There's a knock at the gate downstairs, and Gentiles are there. So Peter comes down, and he goes with them. He even enters into Cornelius's house, the Gentile's house, where he tells them, you know, it's unlawful for me to enter, but God has shown me in a vision I should not think of anyone as inferior. So that's the key to the whole relationship issue for being effective in another culture, another ethnic group. Did you ever think of somebody as being inferior? Sure you have. Everybody does. It's interesting how many people in the world call themselves people. You familiar with the Bantu people group in Africa? Bantu means people. The Navajo, they don't call themselves Navajo. They call themselves the Diné, which means people. Everywhere you go, you find people calling themselves people. But aren't we people? Well, maybe not from their point of view. Just not quite. In the Turkana people group in Kenya, they have a specific word for people. That's them. And then everyone else. And that's enemies. And so they might say something like, that American enemy over there is my best friend. Sounds kind of funny. But those are the words they use. People. Do we, as Americans, have this idea of being superior? Yeah. All our technology and our education and our money, everything else. It's pretty subtle, though. It's always subtle. We don't wear our prejudices right on our shirt sleeves. So, what is it from each of our cultures that makes us want to hold people from other ethnic groups at an arm's distance or more? This is the issue that each one of us needs to face if we want to live the way that Jesus did, the way that he modeled for us to live. So this points to an incarnation model for ministry. John 1:14 tells us that Jesus left the glories of heaven to dwell among us. He lived on our turf, you know, on our terms, and in ways that we can relate to. So that's the challenge for missions today, too. Do our ministries make sense when they're viewed through the eyes of the local people? Unless we're willing to get close enough to the local people, we may miss completely what God may be doing in their midst. We need to strive to be a bicultural person, someone who has two different cultures that they're equally at home in, and to become an insider in the culture that God has called you to. Ministry is being involved with people. It's all about touching people, coming into contact, tactile contact with people in their lives. And that gets messy. Understand what it is to live life from their perspective, because it's from their perspective that the real context of the Lord Jesus wants to come and minister the strategy of language learning and culture as an interlocked whole is what enables brand new people in a new language and culture to begin developing these significant kinds of relationships. So can you imagine a new missionary having just one responsibility? Spend time with people, learning their language. One student said, when he was told to do this, "I've never been so fulfilled in my life." Nothing like this. That student was one of a group of a dozen language learners in Central America. There were over 30 people who came to know the Lord in the first 12 weeks of their being there, learning language. Learning language. Not, they didn't go there to evangelize. Now, we can be very busy in what we think is ministry. But is it really ministry when it's viewed through the eyes of the local people? It's extremely important for the newcomer to establish the credibility of a learner from the outset, from in every single relationship. So oftentimes our self-sufficiency as North Americans is hurting us. Our independence, our ability to live without needing anyone else kind of gets in the way of things. I remember when I was telling one brother, you don't even, in Thailand, you don't even need to go into the bank to deposit money. You can just go to the ATM, you can type in how much money is, you put it in the thing, and you're done. And he said, "Yeah, you don't even have to talk to anybody, do you?" Oh, yeah, you're right. So, what does it mean to be dependent on people instead of living independently? Could it be that we rob people of this privilege of having God bless them because we don't put ourselves in a relationship with them? We often view vulnerability in the West as weakness. It's not good, but vulnerability is actually strength. Jesus showed this. He poured out himself and became totally vulnerable. We have this treasure in earthen vessels, that the excellency of the power may be of God. We don't often come across the locals as being, we don't always come across to the locals as being needy and of having shortcomings. We like to have it all together. And the fact is, we have our own struggles. And if we share those struggles, the things that we go through, the growing processes that we experience can actually serve as a pattern to help those people grow in their walk. So high status roles that we can carry, I could go to Thailand and work as an IT person. There was a rumor going around at the orphanage in Suchava. Hey, he knows Bill Gates. Somebody told me that. One of the children told me that. I'm like, what? That's crazy. No, I don't know Bill Gates. Anyway. So establishing credibility as a learner and vulnerability is okay. So in this area of relationships, I corresponded with Dr. Mary Sue Brewster. Her husband Tom passed away some time ago from complications because of his paralysis, but she gave me permission to make available a short document of what I call power tools. Its title is Things to Learn Early, Texts for Bonding and Early Learning. And there's a PDF that's in a folder on my OneDrive, and the handout that you have has a QR code as well as the full web address for that folder. I'd just ask anybody who's here, you're welcome to use it for yourself, but let's honor her copyright and not just make up lots of copies and hand them out. But they give a lot of really excellent ideas for beginning texts for learning. Here are some openings, like a greeting. For example, hello. Okay. How about an appreciation, a way to say you're appreciating something. Thank you. Or a leave-taking. Well, goodbye. So the way they talk about doing this is meet someone that knows your target language, and you can maybe give them this appropriate greeting that you've learned in their language, and you ask them for some help, and you get these kinds of phrases from them. You've found a language helper. And you immediately practice saying this to, say, half a dozen people. And then from somebody in those people, maybe, who seems approachable, maybe you want to elicit something more, something like, you know how to say hello, then you ask them, well, how do I say goodbye? or how do I say excuse me? And you just continue using, you get, you learn, you use a lot of times. You learn something a little bit, and then you use it a lot. You continue using everything that you know in a big number of additional encounters with people. And just always be on the lookout for someone who can help, that you can elicit more phrases from. You're always wanting to get something, learn it, and then use it a lot. And follow the learning cycle. Get it, learn it, use it, evaluate, envision the future. Another example, the next tool, and notice, these are tools for developing relationships. Greeting. Sawadee kap. That's it in Thai for a man. Or if you're a woman, you say sawadee ka. So, something that says, I'm a language learner. Chan gam lang rian pasa Thai. I want to learn the Thai language. Something that knows you're young in learning. Put dai kani. I can only say about this much. sorry. Did I elicit too many things? Hate when that happens. So, you need something that lets people know that you're young in learning the language. Then you say thank you. Kap kun ti rap chang fang. Thank you that you listened to me. and you may even want to say, let's try to say see you again. How's that? Lao pap kun mai rao rao ni. Love that. And log on. Goodbye. So there's a lot more text in this document. You have text for learning people's names. Let's see. I have that here. And let me move it over to the other screen. Can I get it over there? It's not going to let me do it. Okay. I'll show you later. There's a lot more texts in the document, that learning people's names, building a regular route that you can go around each day for daily conversation, finding a family to live with and learn the language, probing and respecting politeness patterns, learning numbers, getting around on public transport, buying and shopping, and talking about yourself. It's really neat and very useful. So there's three roles that they talk about that would be good for a language learner. They make sense to the people that you want to minister to, and they allow you to be viewed as good news. Like, this one person that I think Kathy and the girls met walking around the neighborhood, and he said, I know you want to come and convert us to your religion. Okay. But if you come in and you look like you want to be a learner, the disciples were instructed to go and make learners, disciples of others. So this learner role is low profile, and it's welcomed and understood from a whole bunch of different cultural perspectives. And so you get these power tool phrases for learner roles. You can elicit names of things, phrases for practicing the sounds of the language, phrases for exploring the verb tenses. Then another role is that of the servant. And so they have tools for being a servant. Jesus said that anyone who wants a special place in the kingdom would be a servant, right? So they've got tool phrases for helping, how to pray for people, and how to use your professional skills. Maybe you're a carpenter or you do IT and they've got computer problems, you know, whatever. Ways that you can be a servant. And then the third role that they said makes sense is the role of a storyteller. Now, that's really neat. You know, Jesus was a master storyteller. And often we think of mission activity as proclaiming or preaching the word. But, you know, there's 11 different Greek words that are translated by the English words proclaim or preach. And most of those words focus more on the communication part than they do really on proclamation. So Jesus laid aside, for the most part, the proclamation thing. He wasn't really in a preaching ministry, but he told a lot of stories. And storytelling can enable people to learn a lot of things. You can learn about understanding their culture from news articles. You can learn and then retell their cultural stories. And then that's a really interesting one, because there was one culture, I forget which it was, but the older people are the ones that are the storytellers. And this one language learner, he became known as the old man in their language, because he was a storyteller. He was collecting their cultural stories, and then he would tell them back. But it's an excellent opportunity to get language and then practice it by telling it to others. And you can tell Bible stories and evangelism and church planting stories. A lot of opportunities there as a storyteller. So if your goal is simply learning a language, you have a good chance of failing. But if the focus is on a deep relationship with people, then language learning comes along as simply a means to accomplish the goal. The most important principle to know is to learn a little bit and then use it a lot. Get out in relationships with people. And schools are often sort of doing the reverse of that. So anyway, our number one need as language learners is going to be time. And that is time completely embedded in language learning. Other responsibilities are going to dilute and distract you from the main objective, and that's really building relationships through the language learning. And then the second thing, when we have adequate time available, that second thing that we need is motivation. And that comes from our love for people and a burden for lost souls. And then finally, when we have the adequate time and everything, the third, the vision of the goal ahead and the time motivation, the final piece of the puzzle, is going to be the tools. And this document of the Brewsters is full of great ideas. Ideas for survival, power texts that facilitate bonding with the people that you're wanting to reach, and power texts for a learner, servant, and storyteller role. So that kind of role can be seen as good news in your target culture. So I was going to ask if you have questions and comments, or anything that you'd like to share. But I think one thing that I'd like to do is get this little thing over here. There we go. This is the document, Things to Learn Early. And if I can get it to scroll down. It was done on a typewriter, and this is how old the technology is. But it's got roles that are good news, power texts for survival, learner, servant, and storyteller roles. And they're very, very thorough as they go through these different texts. So, and they have a nice little foreword here. Yeah, avoid literal text translation of ideas. Dictionaries are great, but they're not always great for picking the exactly right word. So you start off with the basics, things like hello and thank you and goodbye, and moving on to, hello, I want to learn this language, and I'd like to get to know the whatever people. My name is this, and my language is this. I'll see you again. Goodbye. It just goes on and on with some really, really nice phrases. And I know that as you're involved in building relationships with people, these kinds of things are handy. Sometimes there's so many, it can seem overwhelming, but it's full of a lot of good things. So, questions? Yes?
Any tips for how to believe in yourself? Because it looks so big to learn.
Oh, yeah, it does.
Yes, I can do this.
Well, if God be for you, then who's against you? Honestly, I am not a whiz at language learning. And my wife and I, like I said, we learned Romanian, we learned Thai, and we get around. Just a few days ago, she was getting some blood studies done, and I saw this woman. I talked to her on the phone asking, when do you close? And I thought, she sounds Asian. And we got there, and I could see, even with the mask on, she was Asian. And I said, I told my wife I thought you were Asian. She said, oh, yes, I'm from Thailand. And so my wife just suddenly, excitedly in Thai says, you speak Thai language? And she's like, oh, yes, I speak Thai language. It's really amazing. You know, she lit up. 2 years she's been here in nursing school. It's the first time anyone spoke Thai to her. Wow. But you can do it. Honestly, you can. It's simpler than you think. But it is learning, understanding how to be a learner. And I've got 0 minutes now. But you can meet me outside if you got more questions.
Thank you for listening. All recordings from Reach 2022 are available from Christian Learning Resource, the campus bookstore at Faith Builders. To purchase additional recordings from Reach or other Faith Builders events, visit us online at www.christianlearning.org or call us at 814-789-4769.